Okay, everybody can just calm down and not panic, because I can assure you that HostGator is once again sponsoring today's show. HostGator is your one-stop website shop. It makes it simple to get your professional website online quick. Plans start at just $347 a month. Let's face it, guys, getting a good .com is hard to do. A .net domain powered by VeriSign, on the other hand, still has a ton of awesome names available. Get out there and get moving, guys. This is what you've got to do to have your domain on a website. It's time. Use HostGator's drag and drop builder or WordPress. No need to code. HostGator makes it easy. Get your site up and running with just a few clicks. I am almost done reading this copy. Guys, head over to HostGator.com, buy some hosting, get some .NETs, and use coupon code JVClub to get an extra 30% off and support this show. We have done it. This is how sponsorship works. Hey guys, welcome to episode 86 of the JV Club with the magnificent Kate Flannery. So excited that she was able to do the podcast again. Somebody I've been talking to about it for a long time. I've known Kate for years. I don't know her well, but I will say I'm a fan, and I have improvised with her. I think she's incredibly talented. I'm also a huge fan of her musical comedy duo, The Lampshades, so I encourage you to check out that out. We will certainly be talking about that in the episode. Shout out wise, I want to quickly remind everyone that they should feel very, very free to contribute to the Kickstarter campaign for the film that I am trying to help raise money for Gabriel Diani and Etta Devine. You can go to dtmta.com. A reminder that I do a ridiculous Kickstarter video in which I cosplay Cora to great effect. And by that, I mean to embarrassing effect. So check that out. I also want to throw some shout outs out to the marvelous listener, Tyree. I want to thank you for being at the New Zealand panel at Armageddon. What a treat. Jean B. up in San Francisco, thanks for offering to get me some gluten-free food. That sounds quite wonderful. Joseph, you created a very, very wonderful image on the Facebook page that I know you posted publicly as well. That is an image of me saying something about information being needed ASA possible. And then also on Facebook, I want to thank Shmoo, Sarah, Amanda, Rob, Shannon, Megan, Dessa, Ben, Jennifer F. Claire, I want to thank you again for your suggestion. I'm not going to say what it is here because it is something I think I'd like to do and work on. So be advised, it is on my mind and I think it would be a really fun thing to do on the podcast. Oh, how mysterious of thee, Janet. I want to thank all the nervous. Listen, I meant to say nerdist, but I'm overjoyed that I said nervous instead. The nerdist commenters. So many of you did tell me about the Edie Patterson episode being flawed, but because I was traveling, I just wasn't checking places like that when I should have been. So I just want to identify that. Thank you for that. Acknowledge it and remind everyone that it has been fixed. If you want to listen to it or re-download it, and I'm not going to call everyone out for Nerdist by name because I'm several episodes behind. But I do always thank you for your feedback, and many of you are regular contributors, and I want to thank you and acknowledge you for that. And then on Twitter, I am so woefully behind. This just seems like a joke for me to even try to cover any of it, but I will at least get shout outs out to Alana, Brett, Paul, Steve, and Whizbang on Twitter. So thanks for weighing in, guys, and please continue to do so. I'm sure I will be giving an iTunes shout out update sometime in the near future. I encourage you to consider leaving feedback on there if you have not already. I'm very officious in like snap to it right now. I don't know what's going on. I haven't even had any caffeine, but I feel like I sound like very businesslike, like I'm conducting a board meeting. But in a way, you all are members of the board of advisors of the JV Club. I thank you for joining. I thank you for participating. I bid you good day.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Jumping in to the hot tub full of Black Widows fighters that is this podcast. Kate was looking around the house and
Shannon has a fantastic leaf-covered hot tub in the back yard.
And I did explain that she was like, oh, that seems great. And I was like, mm-hmm. How do you feel about Black Widow spiders?
Wow.
Because they love the moist, dark, warm.
It's so Hollywood. It looks like the greatest thing in the world. And I then know. You get in there and it's...
Death.
It is death.
Death personified. And it is very leaf covered right now because I also have a tree that rains down debris.
And it's November.
And it's November. I mean, I guess it's... I guess I should be excited because it's fall. But instead... The eucalyptus sort of poisons everything into the ground. It's a whole thing. I have a very toxic backyard, Kate. Basically,
life is toxic.
At every turn, you could end up dying.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I'm not afraid.
It's a microcosm of what the reality of life is. That's just my backyard. It's like the outback. Whatever I can say to downplay anything nice about myself or my life, I clearly am capable of.
Way to go. You just did it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you did it.
I know how to take a compliment. I really do.
You put a black widow in your
insult. Yeah.
Story. That's great.
Do you have any, what is the word I'm looking for? Deciduous? What do we call trees who that actually show signs of fall in Los Angeles?
There's a few. I live on the fourth floor. My place is kind of like my fake New York life. I actually live in a 1920s building in Koreatown. And so I sort of have my fake New York life. I mean, that's kind of what it is. So it's not particularly seasonal. I do have a great view of downtown, and sometimes I can see my neighbors next door in a 1920s building, which is a very rear window, I have to say. Enjoy taking a peek. There is one hoarder. He's just in a one bedroom though, so it's just a few windows. You know.
What
just
is like he hoarding?
You know, I'm
if
not
we
sure.
Might violate his privacy yet further.
There is a high heel, a pump, if you will, in the window, and then there's. I don't know if it's pizza boxes. I'm not sure it's like flattened. I always think the worst. Vintage sheet music. I don't know.
You know what? Maybe
I'd
it's
like
vintage
to think it's
pizza boxes.
Vintage pizza boxes.
You know, the collectible kind. Oh, no.
Clark Gable's first pizza box. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, that's rough.
But it keeps it in perspective. I look at that window and I go, clean out that closet. Get it together. You are three boxes away from starting that collection.
I do feel like... People, I mean, I know that we're just as fascinated. Having said this, I've never seen Hoarders, but I certainly understand the impulse to watch. And I do wonder if it's like we definitely love a train wreck, but is it also because we do need that reminder? We do need to sort of like frame our lives as they relate to other people's lives to go, okay, sometimes I feel like I'm crazy, but I definitely am not a hoarder because that's hoarding.
Right, right. Well, I think it's... I think if you're super uncomfortable, what do they say? If you spot it, you got it. So just keep yourself in check and keep your side of the street clean and don't point the finger too sharply at somebody else. I don't know. Or there's some, I think if there's like an innate discomfort and fear around it, it's like,
for sure.
Okay, all right.
For sure.
So I'm compensating. But I'm not super anal. What a surprise. But you know, I think, but, it is, I think, less is more ultimately if you have if you're comfortable with that. Sometimes I get uncomfortable.
I'm going deep from the get-go, but I do feel like, especially with the hoarding thing and exactly what you just said, if you're comfortable with it, with less is more, is that how often do our things as an accumulation speak to this idea of like, the more I have, the less likely I'll die. Somehow,
right,
you know what I mean?
Like,
I'm here, I'm grounded, these things belong to me, I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
And that there is that sort of like, maybe that's why we're uncomfortable with the idea of hoarding is because they're just acting out on a fear of death that we all have.
I guess,
but that we monitor in a different way, kind of.
Right. And I also think sometimes hoarding is sort of like one of those things, well, if no one calls me all week, I will be so busy with my teapot collection.
Right.
I don't need you to call me if you want to be my friend. That's okay. Yeah. Because like I bring it down to like, you know, it all comes down to, you know, sort of like that high school-y like, who's going to call?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Interesting. I clearly am focused on death right now. Yeah. Whereas you
I'm focused on
back
being unpopular.
And tea, evidently.
Sometimes.
Well, I want to actually, I do want to get to that, but I also want to say quickly that I'm always down for a Rear Window reference because it's such a great movie.
It is a great movie.
And it really does play into that sort of, like the agony and the ecstasy of other people's lives. And right. I've talked on the podcast before, like I remember with Padgett Brewster, I talked a lot about, we both have the fascination with like dusk and watching people's lights blink on. Yeah. If you're walking through a neighborhood and like smelling other people's dinner cooking and what are they watching on TV time. And oh. How close to being a total snoop am I if I'm sort of like peering over fences because I just really want to know what's going on in there.
No, it's real. It's a real thing. I mean, at least for us, it is. Maybe not for everybody, but you know, I don't know. I think it's also sort of like getting ideas from other people.
No,
it's
not all negative. No. I really agree. I mean, I really feel, and I think that's I do miss that about living in. I mean, for me, San Francisco, having that small space, like my bathroom opens to like the chute where everyone's bathroom opens out to, there's something kind of wonderful and so different than the isolation that a lot of us feel in LA of creating that kind of fake New York life, like you said.
Right. Well, my last 6 months in New York, I lived in New York for 3 years the last time. I've lived there a few times before for shorter amounts. But the last time, my last 6 months, I was in Carroll Gardens, which I was sort of like, I don't want to go to Brooklyn. And then once I got there, I was like, oh my God, I love Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I was in, that Italian neighborhood and there was a family that lived above me and I used to write down so much of what these people said because it just cracked me up. I remember like the first day I lived there, I went to the grocery store and I literally heard someone yelling like, Michelangelo, get over here! You can't make this stuff up. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's so amazing.
It's so fantastic. Did I just blow your sound system? I'm sorry.
No, okay. I think it's totally fine. God knows I've shouted once or twice and my laugh itself explodes ears. But and Carroll Gardens is another. Yeah, absolutely. I have friends who live in Cobble Hill and guys, just so you know, that's like right over the bridge in Brooklyn, that sort of long span of like, I don't know. What are those main streets?
I lived at President and Clinton.
Clinton.
And Clinton was president at the time. That's when I lived.
Oh, that's funny. That makes it very easy to remember
if you have an inebriated
night and you have to remember how to get home. But yeah, that whole sort of, that old New York, that Brooklyn, like Carroll Gardens it's such a great Italian neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like for somebody like me, who's from Arizona, been exposed to my share of like Chinatown, Japan kind of stuff, but you don't have as rich of a kind of Italian heritage the way you do. Like,
yeah, it's just an unselfconscious thing that just goes on. I mean, they just are who they are. And, you know,
yeah.
I remember my neighbor, there was a little boy and the mother, like you'd hear the little boy like, hey, Mom, watch me jump down the stairs. And the mother would be like, you're going to break your leg. I'm going to freaking kill you. I mean, they're always like screaming at each other. It just cracked me up. Like their exchanges were so, so crazy.
I feel so timeless too when something, like not to, I mean, I guess that's the upside of like people fulfilling stereotypes, especially if they're sort of lovable stereotypes and not like super, you know, inappropriate.
Well, I'm Irish, so I'm Italian adjacent because I'm Catholic.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you too. Is very, very Irish name, and I wanted to know how. I guess I was going to say like how Irish are
I'm
you?
I'm pretty damn Irish. Yeah, I'm Irish on both sides. My mom was a Donnelly. My dad, of course, is Flannery. And my dad had a bar that my grandfather started in the 30s called Flannery's Tavern. He had it up until the late 90s.
It
was just like the most, you know, my dad goes to mass every day. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I'm one of seven kids. I'm the youngest of seven kids. I mean, it is like so on, you know, and Philadelphia is it's a very small world if you're Irish Catholic. If you're Catholic anyway, but definitely if you're Irish Catholic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of seven.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. Were both your parents born in Ireland?
No. My grandparents on my dad's side were both from Ireland. And then my mom's grandparents were from Ireland. So I didn't stand a chance. I think I might be inbred. I'm not sure. I couldn't be surprised. So every time I date an Irish guy, I'm like, we might be related. So I sort of went against that for a while. Like, you know, the most different ethnicities possible. But then, you know, whatever. I mean, find it's okay to have similarities with somebody, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Because I think there are those pockets in your life. There certainly were for me where I was making very active choices based on stuff like that. Like, I've got to get really far away from this. And like,
right.
I needed those boundaries, I think, as I was kind of identifying who I was. Right.
And also, to be honest with you, Irish guys are so full of crap. I mean, Can I say shit? You certainly can. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah. They're
completely full of shit. And they know it. And that's part of being Irish. And it's a beautiful thing. And now I appreciate it. But at the time, I was like, ugh, I'm so over these Irish guys. Ugh.
And in what ways were they full of shit? Were they like just blowing smoke up your bum?
Irish guys always have an angle. If they're really Irish, I mean, they've got an angle. Come on.
Interesting.
You know, and it's fine. I mean, it's charming. Uh-huh. I love it. But for a while, I had to go, it bugged the crap out of me for a long time. And then I have come to make peace with it and actually enjoy it and realize that it's part of being Irish. It's part of who we are.
I so badly want to come up with like a scenario in which you would think one thing and then realize like, oh geez, you totally just had an angle or whatever. Like,
I don't know. There's always a little hustle, a little Charlie hustle in there, you know.
Was it a situation where you would end up being betrayed in some way, or was it just more like?
Well, I think everybody's a smart ass and sarcastic, and you know, you have to really been able to be verbally, you know, like you have to be pretty verbally astute, and you have to defend yourself constantly, hopefully with humor.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the best way. I mean, I think that's one of the best things about being Irish is just, I mean, and obviously if you have to be self-deprecating, you have to put yourself down first before someone beats you to it. Uh-huh. That is just part of the deal, baby.
I get it.
And you know, you can't toot your horn. You can't toot your own horn.
Yeah.
You know, who do you think you are? Really?
Yeah.
You know, that's like, you know, it's like, here we go. My brother always says that whenever someone comes up and asks to take a picture with me now, here we go. It's going to give me a hard time. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
I better not let her get too excited about who she is or what she's accomplished. Yeah. So how many, so of the seven, how many are boys and girls?
Just one boy and six girls.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, that is a family of ladies.
Yeah. And
where does he fall in age range?
He's the second oldest.
Okay.
And he actually had his own bar for 15 years in Philly. That my dad actually ended up working for him up until 2 years ago. He just sold it 2 years ago. But you know, my dad is much more easygoing, and I think my brother, like, he just doesn't take stress as well. My dad sort of lets things roll off his back, and you know, I don't know, but I think my brother's wound pretty tight. So
yeah,
it's kind of one of those things where you know, you sort of see. I mean, I've worked for him a few times. I used to fill in at Christmas. You know, even up until a few years ago. And, you know, it's just like, you just want to, I mean, you know, it's like there's stress in the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in the weeds and you got a lot of people at the bar, you know, it's not brain surgery, but it is important in the moment. The
sure,
people get
sure.
their food and their drink and, sure. you know, and nobody's a douchebag to them, hopefully, you know, it's a minimal requirement, but
yeah. Or is your family, sure. so with you doing that, is your family still super tight knit? I mean, is...
Yeah. I mean, that's yeah, so great. Yeah. Everybody's pretty close. I have one sister in Chicago and one sister in D.C., but everybody else is
in Philly. Do you guys do holidays together and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's so great. I don't really have that because I'm an only child, so I don't. I always am so interested in...
Well, there's this crazy phenomenon. Ocean City, my family still has a house in Ocean City, New Jersey, which is... It's about 8 miles south of Atlantic City, about an hour and a half southeast of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And the house does not have any heat. There's a shower in the back porch. It's a bunch of twin beds. It's 5 bedrooms, but it's just like crammed in. It's not fancy, but it's fantastic. It's a block from the beach. And it's like, you know, it's just this weird phenomenon. Like I never knew as a little kid that like someday I'd be like, you know, sleeping in a bed next to my sister in my 40s. It's like, what the hell? It's just crazy. It's just crazy. And it becomes a little bit of a dormitory style. So even if you're a couple, my dad's still so Catholic. It's like, unless you're married, you're not sleeping in the same room with your fella. Get out of here. You know,
tradition.
So it's a trip. So, you know, I feel like we always have at least one or two weekends a summer that I get to go and kind of, you know, hit myself in the head and be a kid again.
I did bikes
in the garage and, you know, I mean, you know, yeah. I always see people, like my parents had this whole system where, there was a few families that they were friends with that they would have a house at the shore and the mothers would be there for a summer with the kids and the fathers would come down like Wednesday night, leave Thursday morning, come back for the weekend, come back, you know, Saturday morning and stay till Monday morning. They had this whole system because my dad owned a bar. It worked great because, you know, he usually was working nights.
Sure.
So, and then I was friends with all the kids of my parents' friends, you know, so it, you know, and my mom would play bridge and, I knew after the couple drinks, you know, you let them have their first drink and then you hit them up for money before you go to the boardwalk. I had this great boardwalk. Smart. There's actually no bars in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Oh, really?
But there's more alcoholics per capita. I swear to God. They just bring their own. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So it keeps it really safe because if people are going to get smashed, they're already in their house or at, like, close by.
Sure.
Usually within walking distance of a friend. So.
I mean, everything you're describing, especially for me being on the West Coast, and again, I know I've said this before with guests who have described this life that I just can't connect to in terms of my own memories. It just sounds so fabulously East Coast to me.
It just sounds very stereotypical.
East Coast. It's so great though.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I mean, we didn't go away on trips anyplace. I mean, one time we went to Chicago to see my cousins, like I think, you know, when I was like six or something, but every summer we went to the shore and you get work on the boardwalk. You know, I mean, I would have more than one job sometimes. I mean, I think I started working when I was like 13 and just, you know, you get working papers pretty early there, or you could take classes there. It was just a great place to kind of learn to figure out who you are in the world.
And being from such a big family, it seems like it's interesting because it seems like that can breed either like super dependence in terms of like just being needing to be in a group all the time, or sort of being a baby because you've got everybody kind of looking out for you, or can breed like a real independence. And it sounds maybe like that's what happened for you, is like that's very independent to go out and be working and
kind of getting
to know yourself in that way.
Well, I think, you know, being the youngest too, you learn from other people's mistakes in the family. I mean, you know, a couple of my sisters, they did way more drugs than I did in high school. And I was like, they were idiots. You know, I mean, they were, you know, sometimes like, they wouldn't quite make it to bed. They'd like be passed out in the bathroom. It's like, get your ass to bed. Like, you know, just get it together.
Yeah.
Get it together.
What's the age span? Who's the oldest? Like,
the
how
oldest
many difference?
Is 14 years older than me.
Yeah.
So there was a little parental stuff from my oldest sister. Mm-hmm. So, not so much for my brother because he couldn't give it a shit. But you know, and then as it goes down, so you saw like the sort of, you know, babysitting styles of some of my older sisters, and some of them were nicer than others. And, you know, and there's a certain point where you get to a certain age where like, stop talking to me like I'm seven. I'm going to kill you.
I'm sure.
Stop it. Knock it off.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
They can't see past the little girl that was sort of.
Or their role in the family.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's almost like that's part of their identity. So.
Which happens in a lot of families, right? Is that you kind of, even just going away and coming back to a dynamic and going, no, why am I acting like, like we ourselves end up sort of taking that on and then
Absolutely.
Going, no, wait, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do this anymore. I'm not that kid.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's trippy. And the thing about my dad was that, you know, we lived in a really nice house, but he would drive every day to this really intense down and dirty neighborhood. Because when my grandfather bought the bar, it was, you know, it was in a neighborhood in Germantown in Philadelphia that was, it was working class, but it was pretty safe. And then kind of as the 50s and the 60s kind of rolled in, it became like very, it became more poverty stricken and like a little druggy. So, you know, by the last few years of my dad's bar, like you had a knock on the window before, cause he'd been broken into so many times.
Oh my gosh.
It was almost, you know, like almost like a speakeasy at that point, which was like such a bummer. But, you know, at the same time, my dad owned the apartments above the bar. So he would take care of a lot of these guys that were, you know, really down on their luck. And so he was much more of a social worker than a businessman. So there were always like interesting characters at the bar, interesting, sometimes very sad. But you know, I liked that my dad had this, you know, this is how he gave back. And maybe it's not the most, you know, PC to help alcoholics. But you know what? A lot of people, you know, their families had completely turned their backs on them. I can remember being in a few funerals of some of those guys. We were the only ones there. And there might be like a niece or a daughter, but like never like their whole, you know, nobody from their family really showed up for them.
I hope you're planning on writing your memoirs because
I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
Amazing.
There's like, I mean, this one guy, my dad, he had a station wagon and some guy broke into the station wagon and fell asleep. My dad gave that guy a job and a place to live for 35 years.
Are you serious? That's amazing.
That's fantastic, man. Yeah. You had to pry the potato peeler out of his hand. He was a little out of his mind, a little shell shocked moment. Too. But, you know, just this idea of keeping a community, no matter what happens to, you know, it's sort of like, okay, my dad sort of was like, okay, I'm the light in the window. You can come here, you know?
Sure.
So if some of these guys couldn't pay rent, we always had a lot of alcoholics like putting up a shelf or like doing a little yard work or painting, which I think bugged the crap out of my mother. But I have to say, like, I feel like it's the ultimate, walking the talk of, you know, being of service to other people and actually giving them the dignity to
absolutely
earn their place.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think the way that people take care of each other shouldn't never be dictated as like, this is the right way and this is the wrong way. Because I think a lot of the time what ends up happening is like, if it's not the right way, it just doesn't happen at all.
Right, right.
And that's not, and who's to say what's the right, I mean, you know, I just,
yeah.
That's the, that makes me crazy is when people get on their high horse about sort of like, No. Don't, you know, your right. father should not have been named. It's like, well, what are you going to do? You're not going to be involved in those men's lives.
Right.
This is somebody who was in the mix, in the right. mix on at ground zero, watching it happen and doing everything he could in his capacity to try to like make life a little bit better for those folks. I think that's so amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he would have described that because I think it was maybe not as conscious. I mean, I'm making it sound like he woke up one day and was like, I'm going to help the drunks. But he didn't do that. It was just like, but you know, it's funny. A good friend of his growing up, died in a fire, and this guy's kids were in high school at the time, and I think the fire started because he was drinking, this guy, and I know this guy had he became an alcoholic, and I know a lot of people turned their back on him before the fire. And so what's nice is that like his kids talk to my dad as they're older. It's just like my dad's sort of this connected tissue because he has positive stories about this guy. And you know, I think with some people, it's hard to get a positive story if they really make big mistakes. And I don't know. I feel like my dad's always been super fair in that respect. And I'd like to think that I'm that fair, but I don't know. I feel like my dad's, he's a really good example. He's probably like, I have some work to do in that department. He's really fantastic.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I hate that we live in Hollywood because you know what? Maybe if I didn't live in Hollywood, I would still feel this way because I love movies so much. But it is really, it just sounds like, you know, it's so easy to imagine, like, I don't know what your dad is like, but it's very easy for me to imagine like Clint Eastwood playing like this character in a movie, or
actually, my
dad, you know, Kevin Costner.
Yeah, my dad's funnier than Clint Eastwood because my dad's like, he used the bar as like his stage, you know, in a way, because he's really funny. Like he always has a joke and dry as a bone, he can deliver boom, boom, you know. I mean, he's really right. I remember one time Craig Robinson was in Philadelphia playing the comedy club, and he met me at my brother's bar. My dad was working there, and these two ladies walked in, and one of them was good looking and one wasn't. And they walked in, and my dad's like, ladies, take a seat. And they looks at us and he goes, you win some, you lose some. like didn't miss a beat, just like boom. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So he's really sexist. I'm just
okay, great, great. I'm just no, kidding. Great. Still easy for me to picture Clint Eastwood in a movie,
right. Okay.
But he's funnier than Clint.
He's funnier than Clint.
And so did you go to the same high school as all of your siblings? Had everybody gone there before?
We moved when I was seven. So there were like, I had four sisters that went to the same high school as me. But the others, my oldest sister and my brother went to a different school.
But still, having four come before you, how was that? And how similar are you to them?
And are they all
to each other?
I mean, I don't know. We don't all like look alike. It's not like we're, you know, some people, we look related, but I don't know. I think, and there was enough time because there were five kids in a row. And then I'm actually a twin. My sister Susie and I, we don't look alike, but we were 5 years after the youngest. So that's why there's such a wide span. Like But so I feel like after 5 years, like some people still remembered us, but some, you know, remember my older siblings, but maybe not, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know you were a twin. That's so cool.
Yeah.
What's Susie like?
She's a social worker. She's hilarious. She's fantastic. She's got a great heart, and she's just, I don't know. I just feel like she's very similar to my dad. And like, I mean, I'm not surprised that she's a social worker. She's
sure.
And, she sort of has this, a twinkle in her eye when it comes to dealing with some of these people that other people would definitely turn their back on. You know, yeah. I definitely feel like the evil twin in comedy, you know.
But it's still thinking about herself. Social, and it's still so, I don't know, it's very cute. It's even with what we do, I still think of it as being so community oriented and
that's true. And we, you know, I will say, with my comedy at the Lampshades, we do a ton of benefits. I do benefits. I actually just hosted a benefit last week. where, you know, I get to give an award to Sharon Stone. It was so ridiculous. But, you know, like, but I do think that that's part of why I do say yes to benefits, because I'm so guilt-ridden from not.
I understand.
But it's an easy way to give back, you know, and it's sure. Like, I mean, and that's one of the great things of having an act, because sometimes, you know, they'll, because some benefits, like, they'll have rehearsals or they'll have something with an orchestra, which I've done one or two of those, but sometimes I don't have the time for that. So it's nice to just sort of like show up and, you know, like, I mean, similar to, I mean, the Lampshades sort of have their feet in stand up, but we're our own kind of thing.
Yeah. And for anybody who's listening to this, who isn't familiar with Kate's act, I mean, I certainly started seeing Lampshades back at IO before The Office even was a thing.
Yeah.
And you and your musical partner, your comedy partner, Scott, you guys are so funny, and it's just been, it was such a, I remember seeing it at the IO, which is a theater here in Los Angeles, guys, with a lot of really, really stellar improvisers have come out of, including like David Koechner and Richter and Andy Poehler, and so many people have been a part of that, not just in Chicago, but like they've come in and been a part of it in LA pre Upright Citizens Brigade in Los Angeles. And and yeah, you just had such a specific point of view, and I think that's so great. And I don't mean that, I sound like someone's weird aunt who has no sense of humor when I'm like, oh, you certainly you have a specific point of view. But it was to me refreshing, because it just felt like you knew exactly what you wanted to do, and you had your personas, and they were so funny, and the music was great. And it just, it's no surprise to me that you're still doing it, and that, and I love the idea of you being able to fold in, you know, your success, being identified on a show, and to be able to carry your own vision too into the world in that way. I just think it's so cool. Yeah,
well, it's nice. You know, we just did that comedy festival that you did on the Benson Ball in DC a couple weeks ago, and we did the music show with Garfunkel and Oates and Megan Mullally's act, Nancy and Beth. And it's great to sort of have this, like, our own kind of, you know, I like the music comedy thing.
Me too.
It's kind of fun. And I it's like, we can't take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, and sometimes we find ourselves in these kind of what I call like these Spinal Tap moments. Cause like last year we played NASA Safety Day. It was totally ridiculous. We were in
I'm sorry. You're going to have to back up and tell me more about NASA Safety Day.
NASA Safety Day.
Where is NASA Safety Day?
We were up at Edwards Air Force Base with a lot of, you know, heavy, you know, we had all this paperwork we had to do before we did the show.
Gosh.
It was crazy. All this clearance you had to get. We were in a hangar with 1,800 extremely intelligent scientists, There were a few planes in the hangar. We looked like we were in a USO show. We were on
That's
this crazy
so
platform.
Amazing, though.
We were hired to break up the monotony of their safety, safety lecture that they get every year. They're legally required to have.
Oh my God. That's, did you know precisely that's what it was going
on? We did. And what we did was we did exactly what the Lampshades would do, which the Lampshades are a dying lounge act. We just jammed safety into our act as cheaply as possible. We talked about how dangerous it is to be an entertainer, and then we read from Sammy Davis Jr.'s book, Yes I Can When He Loses His Eye. And then we talked about like Sully Sullenberg landing the plane on the Hudson and the birds in the engine, and then we sang When Doves Cry. We talked about, you know, how the storms are getting worse, and the weather is really becoming a liability, and then we sang Riders on the Storm. You know, it's just
customized.
And I felt like maybe one third got us, and the other two thirds we went right over their head, which was actually more amusing. Like, it was
so they may have thought like these people are who they are. They're not actors.
They thought we had no sense of irony whatsoever, which was very
fantastic.
Wonderful. It was, I have to say. And they gave us these crazy plaques that have like NASA Safety Day. It looks like something like a freshman would get in high school for like finishing her science project. And I mean,
honorable mention.
Yeah, kind of fantastic. So that is proudly on my wall.
Oh, that's fantastic.
On display. Yeah. It was very much like, I sort of felt like an episode of I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
They shot a lot of the exterior of I Dream of Jeannie was shot at Edwards Air Force Base.
Oh, was it?
So there were some like classic shots that they used to cut to at I Dream of Jeannie. So
I would
oh my God.
Totally recognize that. I did love me some I Dream of Jeannie.
Did get to do the flight simulator. I was going to say,
once you were there, did you get to have any kind of...
Oh, yeah. And yeah, it was kind of fantastic. I killed everybody on landing the first time. that's an expression. No one died.
Yeah.
Just my soul, just my, my ego. but it was really fantastic. I will say what a surreal and fantastic.
Yeah.
So the lampshades have taken us to some strange places.
Well, I completely relate to that because I do feel like I'm always looking for the sort of like a situation like that where you think, well, I don't know when the next time is I'm going to get asked to do this. And would I ever be here under normal circumstances? And like, what kind of crazy adventure can come out of this? I guess within reason, because I'm sort of a wuss about certain things. I wouldn't be like, I don't know when we're going to get asked to skydive again. I probably wouldn't would you?
I don't know. Maybe. Skydiving. Although having heard about that recent accident with the sky, although all the skydivers did get out. Thank God they were all parachuted.
Yeah.
That was kind of, those two planes collided with the... Yeah,
that doesn't help. Yeah. Nothing like that helps when you're like, maybe I'll do, maybe. No.
Well, but they, you know,
but they were
mission
all,
accomplished.
Yeah.
They all, I don't know.
But the moment, I think for me, it's like that nothing to fear but fear itself. Like, I'm pretty afraid of being afraid. I don't enjoy terror.
Well, you know, when we were in DC, we did that Segway tour. I was like, a bunch of comedians. It was so much fun. Oh my, that was fantastic. And I was really nervous at first. And I was like, oh, if I'm hating this, I'm not going to go because they have like a half hour training. And I was like, if I don't feel comfortable, I'm not. Because you're on the streets, you're on the sidewalk, you're in traffic, you're actually on the road.
Yeah. I mean, but don't you know Segway is the next big thing?
Very intuitive. And I was pleasantly surprised with my quick progress because I thought I was going to kill myself or someone else.
I've only been on one and I felt the same way. I thought it feels like when you see someone on one, it looks like the most benign. I mean, that's why it was so funny. I think on Arrested Development is like, it just looks so benign
it's
and
crazy.
So slow.
Yeah.
But then when you actually get up on
it's
it, you're that very beginning moment of like, how is this? I don't know if I,
Once you figure out how to stop, that was my biggest thing. Like, I'm not sure I know how to stop. And then if you have to think about stopping and then you stop, it's so weird, but it's really intuitive.
Oh, it's
we were on with like Nick Kroll and like, Tig Notaro and, Garfunkel and Oates, you know, Ricky and Kate. We were like, this is so crazy. And the whole government was shut down. So we were kind of like, we're like going by all these monuments, like, taking DC. Anyway, so ridiculous.
Did it make you want to run out and buy a Segway?
I would definitely go on another Segway tour.
Yeah.
But it's great in a group too. I will say there's safety in numbers. You don't feel so like, wah, wah.
Because remember when they first came out, it was like pitched as like, listen, forget it. Everybody's going to be using these for reals. Like finally we have this thing that is of the future, that is practical, that will become a very big part of our everyday life. I feel I was told that when the Segway was introduced.
If I get the right outfit to wear on it or the right helmet, I might consider.
Be golden.
But we'll see. We'll see. I got to think about that. That's
Segway.
Yeah. I Segway, therefore I exist.
Speaking of Segways, let's get back to your high school experience. we were talking about, okay, so you and your sister Susie, people who listen to this podcast know I am forever fascinated by twins and delighted by them because I, as an only child, feel I'm the polar opposite and felt connected to no one in that kind of way. Not even having siblings. I have a cousin that I'm very close to, but he's 10 years older than me. And my other cousins I'm not really close to, although I love them, but we grew up so far away from one another. And so I'm just so interested in that kind of relationship for you to have such a big family and then also to have the closeness. I mean, did you guys, I'm sure you get asked this all the time about being a twin, so it's probably not that interesting.
We dressed alike until we were, I don't know, probably like 9, which was a long time. Mm-hmm. My mother belonged to a twin club, so they got clothes. Like, we'd give clothes.
But you guys aren't identical twins?
We're not identical.
Yeah.
But it was like, I just think it was like an identity thing. And I remember my sister hated being a twin, and then I hated it. As I got older, I hated it, because I felt like she suddenly got really into it. I'm like, wait a minute. It's
like, you guys flip-flopped on.
We did.
Like, why did she hate me? So did she hate being a twin because of she felt like...
I think she just wanted I think she would get pissed because I knew, like, I would have, if I woke up first, I'd wear an outfit and she would wear something different. And so I would go upstairs and change to what she had on that pissed her off. But I was like, hey, you're messing up the act.
This
hey,
is what we
got
do.
One stick here.
Yeah.
7 of us. You're breaking it. What are you kidding me? You're ruining everything.
She would go off and change to match her.
Yeah, I could see how that desperate would, attention
she wasn't into
seeker.
It.
That was me.
Yeah.
She was not into it. She was much cooler than I was.
But to be a desperate attention seeker, but to also you could easily have gone the other way, where if you really wanted the attention, that you wouldn't want to share it with anyone, right?
Right.
That you could have been.
I was like, an inclusive attention hog.
You sure
That's what
were.
I was.
You sure
inclusive.
Were.
Yeah, that's why I have a 2-person lounge act right
I
now.
I love it. Yeah, she's basically Scottish Susie. I get it.
Right.
Totally get it. And did you feel, did you have like great friendships when you were in high school? Did you feel.
Like, I think we were sort of. Over each other in high school. Like I remember I was always late in high school, like for the bus in the morning. And even if she was like 5 paces ahead of me, I'm like, I would miss the bus. I'm like, really? You couldn't tell them I was right behind you?
Yeah.
Really? Cause that meant I had to, you know, walk 6 blocks, take the train, possibly get there late. You know, of course, like, you know, why didn't she stick up?
Why didn't she?
I mean, well, it's also not her job to make sure that I get my ass to school in time either. So
I guess that's true.
You know, come on. I don't know. So, but
that just sounds like classic too, like sibling stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Absolutely.
Of course, she's going to be like, well, I'm not gonna
absolutely. And I think
I could get myself to onto the bus in time, I don't need to. Yeah.
And I think one time I called her a backstabbing slut in the right by her locker. I'm like, you backstabbing slut. It's like, suddenly I was in Dynasty. I don't know what. Like, I don't know why. We did go to all girls high school too, a Catholic high school. So I guess that's why I was like.
You backstabbing slut.
Yeah, that's really.
Is it safe to say she neither backstabbed you nor was a slut?
Nor is a slut. No.
Yeah,
I'm gonna.
Just felt like the right thing to say.
Yeah, just
in a
really
moment.
Just came right. Just very Joan Collins. It just really came right out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. Those writers, man, that Dynasty, they really had their act together. Let me
they
tell you.
Certainly knew how to get a young woman excited to get saucy. Did you, and what were you interested in high school?
I mean, I was
you
interested say, in like, theater
you were,
I
from
was
a young age.
Yes, I was a cheerleader in grade school. And I remember I was captain of the cheerleaders when I was in eighth grade. And then I remember trying out for cheerleading team in high school and I didn't make it. And I was so upset. My father's like, something else is waiting for you. And then, of course, I got into the plays and the cheerleaders were completely. But it was it was definitely a blow. You know, you feel like I'm number one. But, you know, I went to a really small Catholic grade school. So,
yeah, who were there were cheerleaders cheerleading for our female sports teams. Is that how
yeah, yeah. Yeah, and actually, I think there was a boys' school right next door, so they actually cheerleaded for their football team.
Okay,
yeah,
so there wasn't like a girls' football team.
No,
I got really excited that there was like super feminist. Like, yeah, we had cheerleaders, but we also had like a fierce football team that the cheerleaders cheerleaded for.
No, we weren't that progressive.
It was a boys' school though. It was an all boys' school.
It was an all boys' school. It was right next door. We shared the library with them, and the auditorium and the chapel. So when I got interested in a guy I did theater with, his brother, I got interested in him. We would sometimes like go for communion, which you could get before lunch, and it was a great way to like talk to each other without getting in trouble.
Sure.
And we'd milk that sucker because there'd only be like 20 people at nobody went to get communion. That was like not the cool thing to do.
Right.
Maybe 15 people, so you could sort of squeeze a little more FaceTime
you
in.
Could date at communion.
Yeah,
thanks Catholic
kind of,
Church.
Yeah,
thanks
hey,
a lot.
I'm loving it.
Did you I don't mean to pry or get too snoopy, but did you feel did you really have an awareness of the sort of religion side, like in a very real way? Were you connected to that when you were in high school, or was it more just like a lot of my friends who went to Catholic school were like, oh, it happened to be Catholic, but I can't say that my focus was on like, you know, praying a lot. Bless you.
You know what, I think that because I can't, my dad is still super Catholic. He goes to mass every day and that's his thing. And
every day.
And he has a lot of faith. I think I was into it for a while. And then I think I started to, as like the world got bigger, my opinions changed. So I feel like even probably by the time I think it took really until I was a freshman in college before I stopped, going to church, taking a point, you know, making a point. I consider myself a cultural Catholic.
Oh, I like that expression. That might be the first time I've heard of it.
Yeah.
But it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and that doesn't mean I never go to church, but I will go to support my dad and when I'm seeing him. And also like sometimes it's the only place you're going to see people that you knew that you grew up with. It's one of those things. So it's like, it's kind of a way of a check in.
Yeah. I had to go to Mormon church with my mom and I, like made such an effort to not go when I decided to stop going and became so important to me. Again, like we were talking about, the sort of breaking away from something is a very active choice.
Right.
And then at some point in my adulthood, I was like, oh, you know what? I don't need to not go. Like if it would make my mom happy, why couldn't I just go spend that hour to 2 hours with her on a Sunday and sort of see, but that it's true. There's like people that I grew up around that I would never see anybody anywhere else. Yeah, unless I popped in there with her.
It's a funny thing, but yeah, it is sort of the, it is the, it's part of the, I mean, that's the community. It's like being there. So
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like sometimes it's just nice to have a meditation, quiet meditation. I don't agree with everything in the Catholic Church. I love this new Pope because I think he's shaking up all these old fart cardinals in their boots and it's about time. I think there's such exclusion for women and gays and it's just got to change. The world is just not going to put up with this. And even if there's like, you know, kind of like what happened with, you know, with Martin Luther, where it suddenly becomes a different version of Catholicism, I feel like something's gotta fragment, you mm-hmm. know, or just completely evolve.
I think I really appreciate that too. And that's something, again, that goes into something. I remember I did a HuffPost when I was over at the HuffPost Live, offices doing stories and stuff. We did something, a story that I pitched called, I think, Changing It From the Inside. And I had all these different, like, Reformed Jews and Reformed Catholics and people who, and Teresa Edmonds, Teresa, shout out to you because she listens to the podcast as well. And eventually we'll probably do it. But this idea of staying inside the religion that you believe in and really actively participating to try to incite change. Cause I'm not that person. Like the stuff that I disagreed with about the Mormon Church, I left behind, you know, too. Right. I was just like, these are all the problems I have with it. Therefore it's not for me. Instead of people who say, these are all the things that work for me about it, and this is what I don't like, and I'm going to stay here and advocate for that change. Thank God someone does that, because it's
not me. I know. It's not me either. I know, and I'm sorry to say that, but that's yeah. Sometimes you got to just, like, save yourself. Save yourself, Janet. Save yourself.
To each their own.
Yeah, and some people can survive in that sense of combative energy. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
I think I have too much anxiety just sort of, you know, on the planet. I don't know.
No. Yeah. I feel the same way. I feel like I couldn't be somebody who had like a very contentious job or like a lifestyle that caused me to have to create or deal with conflict on a really regular basis. Like that's like right up in your face. That's
yeah.
Just
I sort
not
of feel like
me.
To all my relatives who are like super argumentative, I wish they'd use their powers for good. Like get into a political situation where you can take out all this energy on people that actually make change instead of me.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
I'm worried that my candle is making you sneeze because maybe that's what's happening to me too.
I'm
you
okay.
want me to blow it
I'm
out?
Okay.
No, all right. You sneeze twice and I'm such a people pleaser that I was like, oh my God, what has happened that I've forced Kate into two sneezes? All right, we won't worry about it. So, okay, and circling back to the boys and communion, I mean, how were you with boys in high school? Were you, did you have crushes that came to fruition or did you?
I did. Well, I'll tell you. Well, of course, when I did theater, we rehearsed after school in the auditorium with the boys. That was like our middle of the two buildings was the chapel and the library and the auditorium. And of course, like now it's so super clear, like, you know, these guys, even though some of them are married with kids right now and married to a woman, they were gay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I remember, you know, I mean, so there's some guys that I hung out with who were clearly, I don't know. But this one, the one guy I did play with, two plays with, I actually met his brother and I was like, ding, 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 ding. This is so adorable. And we kept running into each other. And then like he ended up being my high school boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was a year older than me. And he ran track and he, his name was Happy. And my father used
to...
His name was Happy. That
adorable.
Was his nickname. He used to cry a lot as a baby and he had sarcastic parents.
That's great.
His mother was from Ireland. And
that's how they do.
Yes, I remember his grandmother's from Ireland. I remember. Yeah, I mean, he's very very sweet guy. And I just remember, I did not know how. Like, I don't know. I just did not know how relationships worked. Like, I think we broke up and then got back together like twice, like something stupid and dramatic.
But
like you
were
that.
In high school too.
Yeah, I guess
you know?
That's how it goes. Yeah,
that's totally fair. I've talked to girls who have been in these like really long term like meaningful relationships in high school, and I'm so impressed because I was not.
Oh, yeah.
In that place at all.
Yeah. No.
Like I remember thinking, more than once, like, I found the guy that I'm probably going to spend the rest of my life with. And then, you know, 3 months later, it was like, oh, this is not working out. Either he would think that or I, you know what I mean?
Right.
It felt like we'd been together a really long time by that point.
I know.
Super painful to say goodbye.
It's so funny. Yeah, I remember on my 16th birthday, he gave me a necklace with my name on it. I think it turned my neck green, but I didn't care. I loved it.
I think I still have it somewhere.
Yeah, I put it like in his card.
Happy.
And that the birthday card looked like something you'd buy at the liquor store. Do you know what I mean? Those birthday cards that are like some
or
drunk
the car
on the
wash.
Yeah, yes, yeah, that kind
of
thing.
I go to a car wash and some really great.
Yeah,
great
some really
cards.
Fantastic. You know, I was like, you know, which of course, like being in the bar culture, I'm like, he's right on target. I just remember he would call and my dad would say, my dad would never say who was calling. He'd say, hey, Kate, one of the seven dwarves is on the phone for you.
Oh, no, he's so Irish. Now, that's all I can think is like how Irish that seems.
I know.
Like
it's like
great, sarcastic, like, settle down. I'm going to call you one of the seven dwarves, mister. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. It makes perfect sense based on everything I've heard. All right. I'm going to jump into a couple of, I think we should get into the game portion.
Yes. Oh, please. Let's do it.
As to what the answers will be. Let's do the cootie catcher because that is a perennial classic. Did you do these when you were younger?
I did. It's been a long time though. I'm kind of don't remember.
Let's have you. Well, there's very little work on your part. I'm glad to say. I will also say there's very little work on my part. This is a low impact game for both of us.
Great.
Except for the part where I have to hold the microphone between my knees. Okay, so pick a color. Okay, we're going to call that blue. B-L-U-E. Pick a number. Okay, what was
two?
That? Two? Okay, one, two. Another number?
Five.
Five. One, two, three, four, five. Final number?
Eight.
Eight. Okay. Whoa. Now I'm going to read what's behind eight. It will be a question. Oh, well, there you go. What did you want to be when you grew up? I don't know that we've done this. I know.
I'm just kidding. An actor,
and
obviously.
That's why you should feel horrible that you're not.
No, you're guilty. Well, you know, it's funny. When I was, I was so aware of all the girls that were in Annie because we were about the same age at the Broadway show Annie, and a few of them were from Philadelphia.
Oh, okay,
so I used to read, like, if ever there was, I used to read the paper, like, nonstop. I remember when the show came out because there would be little articles about them all the time, and I had a scrapbook and I ended up going to one of the voice teachers of Andrew McArdle when I was like 13. And I remember I ended up getting a job one day a week at my sister had a job at a Chinese restaurant. So I worked there once a week just to pay for my singing lessons. Cause I had piano lessons and I had tap. My mom's like, that's it. No more. You got to pick. I was like, I want to do it all. So I went to this vocal coach and I remember she was so like, proud of some of her students because she had like some 10-year-old girl that she kept bragging about, like, she can Mary Kay Lombardi, she can sing I Am a Woman in Love in the original key. It's like there was just like we would always sing like these bad, like, you know, Crystal Gayle, like Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue,
amazing.
Or like Can't Smile Without You. It was so like,
were you like, can I please just do the Annie songs?
I know, honest
please.
To God, right? Yeah. And I remember like I auditioned for anything in Philadelphia, like the dinner theaters. My oldest sister Karen took me to an audition in Camden, New Jersey at a bowling alley for this super early morning TV show in Philadelphia called Chief Halftown. It was on at like 6 a.m. It was like the worst. This guy was in a full Indian headdress, but he had a Philadelphia accent. He was a Native American.
Oh, no.
So, but he's like, une tribal members, une. And I remember I had to sing to organ accompaniment. Like, but the only way they could get the microphone to work was like, I literally had to stand in the middle of the lane.
What?
It was so ridiculous.
This
and I did
amazing.
Not make it on. I sang tomorrow but everybody sang tomorrow. It was like such a bad choice. I got beat out by these three sisters who were tumblers and they had leotards on and they were tied. They had chains at the ankles and the wrists and their act was tangling and detangling. And they made it on.
So, that's amazing. Those girls are so very famous. Everybody loves the famous Tangle twins.
And then
triplets.
Al Alberts used to have this show. He's one of the four aces. You know, he had like a big black pompadour and he had this show on Sunday that had all these kids. And a lot of the kids from Annie when they were really little started. I auditioned and my mother wouldn't take me. And she found, I begged her. She finally took me and it was at a catering hall on South Broad Street in South Philly, which is a completely different neighborhood than the one I grew up in. We get there and like, it's a huge hall and the microphone is like super loud and they had a cash bar. My mother's like, I'm having a drink. I love that she had a drink. It's so fantastic.
That's amazing too. Yeah, there is something. It's like, it's so funny. It just speaks to all the most wonderful cliches about like how glamorous you think showbiz might be until you're auditioning in a bowling lane, in a bowling alley.
Or this
oh, that's gorgeous.
And I didn't make it on either one. I remember I was like, oh, like it just sort of kicked up my determination. I also realized like that nothing gets handed to you. You have to sort of work on life.
Sure.
And, you know, I think I sort of figured out some strategies for myself at that point. And, you know, I say, I'm definitely a late bloomer in everything, in love and show business. And I say, like, it's a beautiful thing to be a late bloomer because.
I think so too, because when you don't have to worry about your best. Exactly.
Yeah.
You do not want to worry that your best days are behind you.
Absolutely.
At all.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's, you know, even though I was still waiting tables up and through the first season of The Office, I feel like that was a much better way to go than to have to have a B job after being on a show. Like, you know, you just don't want.
Feeling like you're kind of struggling to doggy paddle your way.
I really feel for the people that have to go through that. It must be really weird because I'm sure their head was not prepared for any of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you knew you wanted to be in showbiz from a very.
I did.
And Annie was so. I mean, I'm sure Annie. Maybe Annie is perennial in this way because obviously it's like it's a great musical.
Yeah.
But it's such a great example of. You know, is there a better, I mean, I'm honestly asking this question, but is there a better example of like a really popular, very successful show that really is all about and starring children in a way that feels like, I mean, I guess Oliver or something, but I don't know. Annie is so flashy and special and.
Well, there's a documentary out.
It implants that. Oh, I haven't seen it. That's a great point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's called Life After Tomorrow. Life After Tomorrow. It's about all the girls that were Nanny.
I remember Sarah Jessica Parker was an Annie for some reason.
Yeah, she's in the documentary as well.
Is she?
She's really the only major success story.
After?
Those other girls. They all thought they were going to be stars forever.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, and in the documentary, they ask each of them to sing the song Tomorrow a cappella to the camera.
Is it so painful?
Oh, my God. Some of them, it's like their American Idol audition, and some of them, it's like they're crying because, oh my God.
It takes them back.
It's like
they
almost feel like Coco and Fame. It's like, what is happening?
Bless.
It's like taking off your shirt. Like, what am I doing?
I do not know why I have not seen that yet.
I don't know. You should
be very upset with myself for not having seen it.
Although it is a buzzkill, I will tell you.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling down,
do not pursue that.
Every time I watch it, my boyfriend's like, ugh, you got to get rid of this movie. You cannot keep watching this.
I love that you've returned to it more than once, even though you know.
I know.
This is going to get me down.
I bought a copy of it. I ended up giving it away. I'm like, oh, cannot. No.
And yet I'm 100% sure I'm still going to see it.
Oh, you should. Yeah. You totally should.
Because sometimes I don't. If I know that something's going to upset me or bum me out, I will just go, ugh, I'm probably never going to be in the mood to see that. But I still would watch it like right now if I had time.
I can't look away. Where are they now aspect. It's like, what, you know, what does it really look like? What, you know, it's just all that.
But it's going to be rough.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's like, but in the 70s, you know, they have this whole thing about where they actually got to get all those girls. They were girls. Like, I don't even think they were 14, most of them. And they all got to go to Studio 54. Like, they let them in. They were all little rock stars.
Yeah.
They thought their shit didn't stink, you know? It's so funny because the Lampshades, we just played the basement of Studio 54, which is this club called 54 Below. And Scott kept saying, like, this place is like a puddle of jizz.
That just dribbled down from Studio 54.
The ghost that's of Andy Warhol.
And oh, that's so horrifying.
Bianca Jagger's stuffed horse. It's horrifying. But yeah, so, you know, I mean, that's why I say, like, it's the past is wonderful, but so is the present. The present and the future are really the way to go, baby.
I agree. And that is, I maintain that day after day is like, honestly, if I had to come up with a mission statement, I think it would be if I can just never wish I were going back. Like if I could just always be in a place where I'm just as happy, even if I'm going through something difficult, where I still wouldn't want to erase something and go back to something or feel like my best days were behind me. I just don't ever want to feel that way.
Right.
Because what's the point? You're never going to get back there.
Well, that's
all
true.
You can do is, like, you know, make a life for yourself that you're proud of ongoing.
Amen, sister. Hey, and, you know, it's like that song that Bruce Springsteen wrote, you know. I had a friend who was a baseball player back in high school. Like, glory days.
Yeah. I forgot about that song for a second.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm getting into the MASH game.
Oh, okay.
Now this, we'll have the opportunity to bring maybe some of your fantasies you didn't even know you had right to life.
Okay.
We're going to jump into your reality in your future, and you will never want to look back because you'll be so excited about your upcoming MASH life. First off, I'm going to ask you for, well, let's go tradish. I'm going super tradish. I don't know if you ever played MASH, but this is like, you know, mansion,
you
apartment, shack house.
Oh, no, I don't know this.
Whether when we were kids, it used to be like, I haven't talked about what it used to be like in a little while. So hopefully you guys will put up with this, but like, three kinds of cars that you would drive, three, numbers of children that you would have, three, what's another one? Well, three like famous celebrities that you would be, that would be your husband. I can't believe you never played, but I'm very excited for you. So those are the more traditional categories. What I try to do is mix in some sort of thinking outside the box, customized, Kate Flannery specific, MASH categories as well. But I think just for a hoot and to get you acquainted with the idea of how MASH works, because basically at the end I draw a spiral and you don't look at it, and then you tell me to stop and I count how many rings, and then I do just a process of elimination, and I'm like, okay, you ended up with this car, you ended up with this pet, you ended up with this, and then we've customized this new future for you. If you want to be cruel to yourself, you can also come up with answers that you don't want and play a little bit of Russian roulette and see if you end up with them anyway.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm going to start out with three, this is an old classic, three places somewhere in the world that you have a second home.
Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Galway, Ireland.
Okay, there we go.
I'm so stereotypical. Jesus, right? You could just...
No, this is wonderful.
Set your watch to my...
I've never been to Ireland. I really want to go. What's special about Galway, Ireland?
You know what? My grandfather's from there, and it's the one place that I went to with my boyfriend where I think he was scared shitless. The people were so tough.
Oh my.
But we went to there's this great music place called The Crane. And if you go there in the light of day, you're like, oh my God, someone's going to beat the shit out of me here. But if you go at night when they've been mellowed by the drink, It's like the greatest. Like, people just bring musical instruments and play upstairs, and like they sing a cappella.
I would love
crazy.
That.
Crazy. But you feel like it's just a, yeah.
Sounds like, yeah, dyed in the wool Ireland. That's amazing. I love it. It's a great answer. Okay. Let's go with, you can have what, like, food type, or there could be a really specific food, like a Philly cheesesteak at a very specific place in Philadelphia that you could have access to, like I Dream of Jeannie style, the snap of a finger. Three things that you're like, oh, if I could just have this whenever I wanted.
Okay, this is
great.
So LA, but I was going to say Hugo's green casserole. That thing is
is so good.
What the hell?
I can't say enough good things about Hugo's. I enjoy their gluten-free pancakes as well. Hugo's green...
Yeah.
Casserole. Tell the nice folks what's in the green casserole.
You know what? I'm not a vegetarian, but it's a vegetarian, like fake meat, roasted vegetable thing with cheese. It's insane.
It's just great.
I don't know what they do
with their seasonings or what, but like pretty much every dish is like that, where you're like, what have you done here, Hugo's? It's wonderful.
It sort of feels like the meal you wish your mother knew how to make, but she didn't.
That's a great way of putting it. Okay, so that's a great one. Hugo's green casserole.
I'm going to say Joe's Pizza, the mozzarella pizza in New York on 6th Avenue.
Great.
6th and Bleecker. Even though I shouldn't eat the crust, that mozzarella and tomato sauce is so good. They have like the big circles of mozzarella on them.
Yeah,
it's so good.
You do. Yeah, you know what you're talking about. Great. Third. Is there any sweet thing that you're like, this is so good?
I'm trying to think. You know, actually, and I'm trying to think of like a birthday cake that I grew up with. I'm trying to think of
that's bakery, nice. Yeah.
There's Actually, you know what? I'm going to say Ward cinnamon buns in Ocean City, New Jersey.
Ooh, I love this.
My dad gets them all the time. My cousins call them the bun run. But he's like, it's they have raisins, and they're like, they're not the super big frosted ones from like Cinnabon. They just have this really good cinnamony syrup on top. It's really good. That and it's like, fantastic. It's not too much. It's just kind of, and the raisins are really plump and juicy. Yeah. They're really, yeah.
I'm in. I'm, now it's pornography. Your eyes are like, I know. Because I really do enjoy fruit in something warm if it's done right. Yeah. And I really hate it if it's not.
Yeah.
But like what I didn't know until I started cooking more on Dinner and a Movie is like we used to make these scones that were just insanity because they used like this whipping cream, a heavy whipping cream instead of regular cream.
Yeah.
And so they were so moist. And we used dried fruit rather than fresh fruit, which seems kind of counterintuitive, but that makes it plump more and be juicier.
Is that what it is? Is that what the, that's
so it's,
what
they're
it
probably,
is.
Yeah.
That's what they're
I mean,
doing
I guess,
then.
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
No, I'm sure.
Right, but yeah.
Because it's so consistent.
Yeah.
And the thing
something
is, you can
just
not
really plumps it up.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, it's so good.
We just turned on the Food Network. That's what we did.
That's fantastic. We did. And I'm always 100% on board for it. Okay. How about three places, like just fun, strange, exotic places that the lampshades play, and make them three places where you would love to travel there, but they would not know what to make of you.
Oh, you mean
imagine being in like Barcelona and being like,
right.
"Hello, Spain."
Well, I'd love to play London. If as long as the people are extremely wasted, drunk,
right.
like hostile. Wasted.
We can make that. We can definitely make that a part of it.
I know we'd win them over. We'd beat those motherfuckers. You definitely
up. We'd do would.
It. Yeah,
wasted
we'd the
Londoners.
Laugh.
Got it.
I'm gonna say Hawaii. Maybe perfect. Don Ho's still alive. Is that possible?
Oh yeah.
Because we have played Tiki Oasis in San Diego a few times, and that's definitely like a. That sort of, we have that sort of Polynesian love.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah,
that's
we're
a great
Polynesian
one.
Adjacent.
Sure,
we're not
you are.
Polynesian.
Sure,
but
you
we are.
You're the
yeah.
suggestion of Polynesian.
We are. We have the lounge. The lounge.
Absolutely.
Vibe. And we do one Don Ho song. Because you have to. Because you just have to. You got to get it on the nose.
Contractually, you must.
Contractually obligated.
Yeah.
Gosh, where else?
Those are really good.
Actually, and we've never played a real cruise ship, but I'd like to be on a cruise ship.
Oh, you bet.
We have to.
Oh, no,
it's so
that's
funny because we always talk about how we just came back from a cruise and we never... The gods have
someday,
it out for us.
Someday you really
someday
will.
We'll reach the pinnacle of being stuck on board a ship doing our
well,
act over and over again.
Well, everyone probably gets food poisoning.
Right. Oh,
it's
yeah.
going to be great.
And the toilets will go out. It'll be great.
Oof.
We'll tip sideways. Woo.
I mean, when you say what's the worst that could happen on a cruise ship, the answer is a lot.
Now,
a lot
now
is
we
the
know,
worst that
right?
can happen.
Now, this is because communication was so lousy and this stuff's always been happening, or is somebody dropping the ball?
I'm not sure.
I'm that's still good, one in. Yeah. I'm still, I feel like I'm a survivor. I feel like I'll get through it. I really
yeah.
do. I
oh,
think
no, no,
I
no.
Say
for sure.
On.
For sure.
Yeah.
I can ask this question if you enjoy Disneyland.
I do enjoy Disneyland.
I
feel
like
embarrassed
to
say that because some people are like, Disneyland.
I know, but
whatever.
I love it.
But I'm like, you know what? Having grown up, like Ocean City, New Jersey, they have great rides, and it's but there is like this little bit of a carny vibe.
For
whereas
sure.
I feel like when you get to Disneyland, it's like, oh my God, they've thought of
everything. You'll never see anything untoward at Disneyland. You just
yeah,
never
and
will.
And there's also this, like, that kid memory of, like, movies like Pollyanna, like, the lesser known. And I just feel like there's always something, like, visually that stimulates that part.
I was just there. It's been a couple of years since I was there. And so it has reinvigorated something that did not need to be reinvigorated at all because I already was so excited about it. But I do like to ask the question, three Disneyland rides that you somehow wish were real, just in some way, whatever that means for
well,
you.
I mean, the Haunted Mansion is so fantastic.
Couldn't agree more.
Pirates of the Caribbean, I'm so on the nose. I'm such a bore.
No, it's really okay because
and I have
these
to say,
are just perennial classics.
That new, it's not, it's the ride with the cars.
The cars,
the ride.
I had never ridden that
oh
until
God, so
this weekend.
Good.
It is so fun.
That whole part of the park, they
it's,
really got it right.
You really, you are, it's completely immersive, Cars
yeah.
Land. And
yeah.
I've never even seen Cars because people told me, like, skip it. If you like Pixar,
yeah.
you might be disappointed by that movie. But you go in and they have built, like,
oh my God,
a mountain range.
And those bridges are from, like, 1949, 1950, and
yeah.
they're identical. Like,
it's
you
amazing.
Feel like you're riding.
It's amazing.
It's
that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
It gave me a chance to give a major shout out to that ride because I agree, it was stunning.
And part of it almost looks like the Grand Canyon. I know it sounds
oh yeah,
but the light, especially if you're there
no.
right at dusk, like the change of day to night, it's like
it's remarkable. It's remarkable.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more.
Well, I'll buy done that guy you. A drink, whoever designed that. That's what you right? get. I'll buy him a drink.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I've never done this category before. It's just something that's popping into my mind. I don't even know if there will be good answers to come from it. If there aren't, it will be my fault for coming up with this. But what about three gifts that you wish you could give some member of your family? You can divide it up. So you could be like, number one would be, I wish I could give Susie blank. Number two, I wish I could give my dad blank. Or it could just be like, I know three things I would want to give my dad. Could be the most outrageous thing in the world that you could never actually do. Could be something that's actually doable.
I'm going to say for my dad, a banjo, a station wagon.
Love this.
And...
to replace the station wagon that guy, yes, that, yeah, love it.
Mike Dubs, you fell asleep in and you put to work for 3 years. Because he looks good in a station wagon, my dad.
Oh, I love
and,
it.
And what's the third? I'm going to say I'm going to say another bar. That's what I'm going to say.
Great.
Another bar. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, when she gets to work as much or as little as he'd like.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. This is a tough question because all due respect to your boyfriend, all due respect to your boyfriend. This is an adolescent game.
Okay.
So we do like to, and this can mean that you're just projecting back to like who, like celebrities you absolutely adored when you were an adolescent, or if you have someone now that you kind of have a crush on. And it could also just be like a character in a movie. Like you don't want John Cusack, but you want Lloyd Dobler from Say Anything.
Oh, right.
That.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. I'm going to say Clark Gable in It Happened One Night.
Love it. Great answer. Because, no one's ever said that before. But it's
Oh my God, that guy, I made my boyfriend Chris watch that because I feel like sometimes Chris has that element like of like, just like a wisecracking. He just doesn't take any shit. And yet like some of the things he says are not very PC, but they're right on. It's like,
I like truthsayers. I like soothsayers and truth speakers.
Yeah. Better not be screwy to be in love with her. You know?
That's great.
Yeah. So
okay, crazy. Clark Gable, okay, Happened One Night. Fantastic.
Okay, oh my gosh. Two more. John Wayne and the Quiet Man. I am such an Irish Catholic stereotype. What's wrong with me?
It's so adorable.
And I will say...
And I love that these are classics.
Yeah. I'm like an 85-year-old woman when it comes to movies. No, but I love old movies.
What about like a Cary Grant or like...
I know. I was thinking of a Cary Grant movie that I love him in.
I love him. He's so funny in North by Northwest.
He is. I know. I'm trying to think of my... Although Jimmy Stewart...
Oh, I love
him. Yeah, maybe John Wayne's out. John Wayne's not that. I mean...
You can give him the boot if you need to. You can if you need to.
Jimmy Stewart. I know. And I mean, it's A Wonderful Life is like, there's something about his character in that, again, he's sort of like a misfit, like just sort of an idiot.
I get it.
But I love him.
I'll put that in a moment's notice.
Yeah.
We'll take this as a moment's notice.
Jimmy Stewart, yeah.
Love
and,
it.
And you know, actually, I'm nixing John Wayne because I'm going to put Cary Grant in... what is it? What's the My Favorite Wife, the with Irene Dunn, where he thought she died in a boating accident, but she survived on an island and she comes back.
I've never seen it.
Oh my God, it's so funny, and he's such an idiot, but he's so cute. In this movie, yeah. And then
it's My Favorite Wife. You said
I think it's called My Favorite Wife. Yeah, they did a.
That's awesome.
I think Doris Day did a remake of it in the 60s too.
Okay.
But the earlier one is the best.
Oh, this is great. This is fantastic. Love it. Okay.
I'm like Turner Classic Movies.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. With that in mind, I'm going to see if you have an answer for this because you brought up station wagon. But like, what about three vintage cars that you wish you could drive?
I was just thinking about, I would love to kind of get off my ass and really get a vintage car because I'd love one.
Yeah.
You know, those old Thunderbirds, those are the ones.
Great.
But I also like those little Ramblers, like those like early 60s Ramblers.
Oh, yeah.
With like the maroony red interior.
Yeah.
So cute.
Oh, this is great. Okay, we just need one more.
And I think you got to get just a Cadillac convertible.
Great.
Something ridiculous that takes up three parking spaces.
A boat.
Yeah, that you could sleep five people in. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, final category. I always put a lot of pressure on myself for this. A lot of pressure. What about three products that you have created. Could be like a perfume, could be you love, it could be you designed a car, could be anything like that. Like, it doesn't have to be that something that doesn't exist already. It could just be something that you have an affection for. Like, I wish that I could design. I was talking to somebody who was like, I wish I could design a really nice like camisole, because I feel like you don't find those anymore. Like, that was a big deal to her. And I was right. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Right. I'm gonna invent something that doesn't exist anymore. I hate when you borrow someone's car and you don't know, like, everything's different, so you don't know how to figure it out. Because I once got in an accident because I could not find the horn. I was so pissed. It was in a weird place.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting hit by this, like, slow-moving car I could not. I was like, the horn just... Yeah. So I want to invent something that, like, it's like an equalizer where there's, like, a panel you can put on the car where, like, everything you need, you can find, like, where the wind, where the air conditioner, the defroster. Because if you borrow someone's car and you don't know how to use a defroster and suddenly you're in a situation... You know what I'm saying? It's horrifying.
I love it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's super smart. I seriously probably would have been like, and really good eyeliner that doesn't, I don't know. I don't know why that I think I'm such a girl all of a sudden. But.
No, that's awesome. I think, I'm going to say.
And it could be like a food too, if you're like, I wish that I could invent the perfect pretzel or something like that.
Oh my God. If only there was a pretzel that didn't have flour in it, because I love pretzels, but I really shouldn't eat them. Because I do think women over 40, flour is really hard to digest.
Do you ever get the gluten-free? Or
I do, but I think it's flour in general. I think it's flour.
Like almond meal.
Yeah, like I think it's, I don't know. It's a bummer. But I think it's kind of the, unfortunately. The
hits, yeah.
Ladies, take it from me.
Well, I'm just going to put a flour-free pretzel.
Flour-free pretzel. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, because... Being from Pennsylvania, I love pretzels.
It's great. I do.
Did I mention that I made my older sister drive me to Hershey, Pennsylvania to see Andrew McArdle, the original Annie, sing with Liberace
in like 1979, 1980. You did not, m'lady. That is really amazing. Yeah. How begrudging was she about that? Was she like, I don't want any
She actually had friends up there, so she was fine.
Good.
She was fine with it, but it's like, it's about a two-hour drive.
Liberace. No,
I actually watched Sassy Liberace. This was like, so when I was watching Behind the Candelabra. So when my sister drove me, I was like asking questions on Twitter, because I'm at Kay Flannery on Twitter, and I was like, guess what highway she took? So bad.
Amazing.
But I love the gays.
I love that you did it. Okay. So last one. We're in the home stretch.
I'm dragging this out. I don't want it to end.
No, this is going by with lightning speed.
Okay.
Sometimes I have like such long pauses as my guest very thoughtfully and silently thinks about her answer that I'm pretty sure people are like fiddling with their dial, like something's wrong with the podcast. No, I'm all about it.
We now return to your regular schedule program.
Don't worry. She thought it through, guys. This is right. Yeah. No. So we're in good shape. We're in very good shape.
Good.
But yeah, so your final invention.
My final invention.
Or your final, like, whatever, some pre-existing thing that now has your name on it.
I will say, some insert to put in your shoes or even heels that makes them the most comfortable thing in the world. There's gotta be something.
Because every time someone's like, no, we'll just put inserts in there, and you put it on, then the shoe doesn't fit anymore. It's still really uncomfortable.
There's gotta be something that fixes a shoe for real.
Yeah.
For real.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. Cause girls, our legs look so much better in the heels. It's not a lie, but you got to do it. I mean, that's where the vanity insanity kicks in.
I know.
You make your choices.
And I put on a heel and I immediately feel it in my shoulders. It's like it's not even the impact to my whole body is instantaneous.
I know, but I don't have hair extensions and I have not had a facelift. There's no plastic surgery happening because I would have lost my job on The Office, let's face it. So I'm going to suffer somehow. So I guess it's my feet, which I guess is great if the fellas look at you from the... From the waist down.
If you guys could see how incredibly gorgeous and wonderful Kate looks today, even just showing up for a podcast, it's hilarious. Okay. Tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
Okay. I was going slow.
I was thinking about the audience.
One, two, three, four. It's a straight four, guys. A straight four. I'm pausing this. I will come back to reveal your 100% guaranteed future. Okay. No surprise here. Great new future, because you gave great answers. The only question is, where do I even start? The first thing I want to tell you is that this is good. This is also good. Okay. First of all, I'm going to start with the invention because I think it was so genius. I love that you were responsible. Many people will thank you for this, for the equalizer for a borrowed car, a rent, whether it be a rental car, you got to move someone's car out of your driveway. It makes so much sense to me. Like you just, it instantly, it's like goes right into your brain and you just suddenly Matrix style know where everything is and it translates right. for you. I'm super on board for that. And thank you on behalf of all of us.
Hey, take it easy on the road.
Now you want people to take it easy on the road because you are going to be looking out at them from behind the wheels of your Thunderbird.
What's the word? Thunderbird.
Down the road in your Thunderbird.
That's sexy.
I don't see you driving it all the way to your gig with Scott in London to a bunch of wasted Londoners.
Yeah.
But you are certainly headed that way.
I love it.
Probably via plane.
It's better not to drive.
Yeah, I would say don't drive to London. Right. I would just recommend that there's a vast ocean that's going to be a problem for you. So congratulations on that. While you're in on the continent, is that what I want to say?
Sure.
While you're on the island, while you're in the UK, you can just scoot on over to the apartment. I'm not sure because MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, and house.
Uh-huh.
So that one's like gets pre-decided sort of by right. by the count. I don't know how this works that you have an apartment in Galway, Ireland, but you do have an apartment. It's not a house, sure. a mansion, or a shack. You just have a little cute little apartment.
I love it.
Possibly right around the corner from Crane's.
The Crane. Yes.
So congratulations on that. What a joy. You were gonna have those people wrapped around your little finger, that town, the entire town. Well done on that. If you start feeling a little bit homesick, know that at any moment, no matter whether you are in London, Ireland, or some other faraway place, you can enjoy a slice or more of Joe's mozzarella pizza straight from New York City.
Yeah, baby.
Blinked over to you, I Dream of Genie style. And you know what? If you really feel like you want to get away into a world of fantasy, I welcome you to spend some time with the ghosts from the Haunted Mansion because it's like a real thing.
Sure.
It's come to life.
I love it.
What a joy.
I love it.
And then that just leaves us with a couple of pieces of information that are very, very key. Number one, I really hope your dad enjoys his new banjo. So well done you. That's actually something you could buy him for Christmas. I don't want to give it away because I'm sure he listens to this podcast.
Play, though. But he's talked about it, but yeah, we'll see. Yeah, actually, that is an idea.
Or a decorative banjo to hang on the wall of the bar. and all due respect to your boyfriend.
Yes.
I do want to say you won out with my personal favorite, Jimmy Stewart from It's a Wonderful Life.
So. I'm officially an 85-year-old woman. In your Thunderbird.
Driving
and Betty White hanging out.
It's fantastic.
Betty, baby.
It's fantastic. You are fantastic. And I thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you, Janet.
As
awesome.
Everyone knows, you can follow Kate Flannery.
Kate Flannery on Twitter.
And
reruns of The Office.
Certainly you will see her
You're
on reruns till the end of time, I'm sure.
Without remote.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dreaming about Jimmy Stewart. Instead, enjoy reruns of The Office starring Kate. And also, if you have the opportunity to check out The Lampshades, I strongly advise you to do so.
Yes, you can go to thelampshades.com, check out our gigs. We're
Fantastic.
Actually doing a show with the Bengals, benefit
That
in
is
December.
Huge and
I know,
awesome.
It's crazy. That's... I'm hosting, and The Lampshades are coming out for a couple numbers. So
I was going to say... It's tempting for me to make you say I guess you need to preempt them by covering one of their songs. Like,
oh my God,
how
right?
funny would
Although
that be?
They might. I don't know.
It's hard to know. I guess if you don't know Susanna.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it would be really funny to like have you cover Walk Like an Egyptian mm-hmm. and then seem surprised to find out halfway through that
that they're there.
Yeah. Really, did I really just give you creative notes on your, I'm afraid I did. But anyway, thank you so much again.
So much,
Kate, guys, thanks for listening. And, we'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.